What are you doing? I'll tell you what you're doing. You're listening to the Elder Scrolls Lorecast. Either you are, or I'll be skipping rope with your entrails. Ta-ta.
This is the Elder Scrolls Lorecast, your source for lore and so much more. Adventurers, welcome back to the Elder Scrolls Lorecast. This is Tom. I'm here with Lotus. You guys know the drill, but we've got a new overlay. I decided, you know what? We've been talking so much about Daggerfall, and so many people haven't really played Daggerfall, so I thought it would be a lot of fun behind us for the live stream and for the video version of this podcast to put some Daggerfall content, which is actually Lotus's last or most recent playthrough of Daggerfall. So right now it's like a load screen. The timing on this perfect worked out perfect because there's nothing happening, but you're gonna see all sorts of fun stuff happening in the background, and who knows, maybe he'll die and things. But welcome back. Yeah, Lotus, how's it going? How's it going, man?
It's good. We were just discussing the varying levels of heat around the world as we have our new season switch, and it's a little warm here, but quite enjoyable at the moment.
We're at
a nice 80 freedom units at the moment.
Oh good. Those free, that's what F stands for.
Yes, freedom units.
Okay, I thought it was something else, but I guess I was wrong.
Nope.
All right, but today we're continuing our conversation about Daggerfall. We've been talking about the main quest line. We were talking about the Dark Bros last week, and Lotus is going to be continuing his playthrough, and eventually we'll get back to the end of the main quest line. But there are lots of other things to talk about. This week, we decided we would dig into the bestiary. It always looks like bestiary to me, but it's pronounced bestiary.
Yeah, I call it bestiary, even though I kind of know better.
Right. Like bestiary so just sounds right, doesn't it?
Yeah. I mean, it makes sense as a bestiary, too, because it's full of the beasts of the game, but it's just like pronunciation, English and all that.
Yeah. So we're talking about all the different kinds of monsters and creatures and animals and things that you can come across in Daggerfall, because just like so many other topics, going back to this early iteration of the Elder Scrolls, you're going to find that there are some things that are included that aren't included in the later games, and some things that aren't included in here that you would expect, and we're going to get into the details. So
we've done bestiaries or bestiaries. See, I'm already doing it. We've done bestiaries before, a lot of them, you know, for Daedric creatures and stuff like that. So it's interesting because this game has, like you said, a little of what we know and what's kind of been phased out. But it's interesting because some of the original versions of even some of the stuff we get is a little different than what you see in the later iterations. And it's pretty interesting, especially when playing through it, running into what they consider the scaled difficulty of certain things, where some things are way more difficult than you would expect or are in later on games.
Yeah. So we're going to get into it because this was a very different type of game back then, but yet it set the grounds for a lot of the things that we have later in the series. So I think you're going to see some of the details as we dig into this. As usual, we are referencing an article from the UESP because they do such a good, they're the best wiki on the internet, even though it, you know, we're a little bit biased because it's about Elder Scrolls.
Clearly not biased as they sponsor our other shows.
but we're genuinely speaking, yeah. I look at a lot of wikis, I look at a lot of content for my other shows, and there's just something, the quality here is so good. So we're going to be reading through some of the details that we're pulling from this, but then also going into other details that aren't listed here like we usually do. But here, let's just start. We're just going to start at the top of the bestiary page because there are a lot of details about these creatures that you wouldn't have anticipated. So, for example, the first bullet point here says higher levels generally referred to level 14, at least in higher. However, it is possible to encounter more dangerous foes as early as level 6. So we've talked about level scaling in the later games, and even in Daggerfall, there is a aspect of level scaling where you don't really come across higher level monsters until at least level 6, but usually about level 14.
Right. And it's kind of the situation of some of the stuff is intentionally there, but there's a lot of procedural generation, which we've talked about many times related to Daggerfall and Arena as well. So if it's essentially procedurally generating your enemies in a certain area or in a dungeon or whatnot, that's more of where you're going to get the scaling bits. as opposed to like, okay, there needs to be a lich at the end of this dungeon. Well, okay, the lich is always going to be there regardless of what you do. I run into that problem more than once where I'm like, this is way above my quest grade, but we're going to try to make this work.
Yeah.
Whereas what maybe spawns and comes at you through memory, well, that seems like that'll adjust. They'll try to keep it in your ballpark level.
Right. And the liches always seem to give you stitches because according to this next bullet point, get this, all monsters of a particular type have the same level throughout the game. That means rats are always level 1 enemies and ancient liches are always level 21. So if you do come across them at an earlier level, even at 14, they're still going to be significantly higher level than you, regardless of what dungeon you run them into.
Or even at level 7, like I did in my playthrough, because I, well, we had talked about there's a lot of ways that the main quest can interweave, and they don't really handhold you to the next step all the time. And I apparently had jumped much farther ahead in the quest line, and I believe it was level 7 where I ran into one, and I basically needed to convince him to shoot splash damage spells into a wall next to him to splash damage himself because I couldn't kill him.
Right. You know, when in doubt.
As you do.
Have them destroy themselves, right?
That's exactly.
Yeah.
It was a moral victory.
There you go. So it goes on and says, aside from its role in selecting the random dungeon inhabitants, an enemy's level is relevant if it is a spellcaster, since the magnitude, chance, and duration of spells are determined by caster level. So the level has a lot to do with how the enemies interact, when they show up, how they interact, all of that. The next point says, an enemy's skills also depend on its level. The value of any skill will always be 5 times the enemy's level plus a starting value of 30. So the math here is, the higher level, it ramps up considerably because it ramps up 5 times. Every level increase of a type of enemy is actually a 5 times higher skill value across the board. It also goes on and says, for example, a level 20 enemy or higher has all skills at 100. A rat, all skills at 35, right? 30 plus level 1 times 5 is 35. For non-human adversaries, skills in the 6 schools of magic can never surpass 80. So at least there's a kind of a
like
top
a
there.
Built-in skill ceiling so that not everybody's like this grandmaster mage that lives in like a hovel off to the side, but they happen to be a high level. And it's like, oh, well, you know, I've only lived here with my aging mother for years, but also, you know, I can cast level 100 fire tornadoes.
right. Yeah, and the spells are very potent. So one of the points of recommendation is this. The fighting strategies for each creature contain recommendations based on Daggerfall gamers' personal experiences. In general, spell reflection, resistance, and absorption are very useful when fighting any monster able to cast spells. It would be worth your while to invest in these spells or in items which can cast them. So if you are going into fighting against magical creatures or magic casting creatures or individuals, and you happen to be a fighter with no ability to deal with the spells, then you are at huge disadvantage in Daggerfall. Whereas in later games like Skyrim, you just run around, you dodge the spells a little bit, you hit the thing on the head with your hammer, and eventually you win.
There's not a chance to hit necessarily and stuff like that, where it's, you know, If it connects in the screen visually, then you probably connected. Whereas opposed to these, it's like it can slug right in your chest and it's like, oh, miss.
Yeah. So we're not going to go through every single point, but this one I found interesting as well. Every non-humanoid enemy has a characteristic noise. Click the associated sound files to hear them. So as you're going through USP or these articles, you can actually click the noises. Quite often, a creature can be heard long before it can be seen. So by recognizing the sounds, you can prepare for what awaits you in the darkness ahead. It may also make the task of finding your quest target a lot easier. And this is interesting because at first this sounds like, well, yeah, no duh. If you're coming across a zombie, it's going to sound like a zombie, right? But no, because the way these games worked, the difficulty was much higher. So the idea would be that you would have a sense of what might be in the room ahead before you go in the room ahead. And then you could change your equipment or prepare different spells or whatever in order to deal with them so that you're not just running headlong into everything. Similar to like a D&D campaign where you're as a group of adventurers, you're like, okay, now we're going to deal with ghosts. Let's make sure we have skills and abilities set up while we rest tonight in order to go fight ghosts tomorrow.
Yeah, and in the older Elder Scrolls games, one of the things to note is, like, you know, there were certain creatures that had, like, thresholds of things that would work against them. It's a thing that's actually sort of only recently been dropped for the most part, but like originally undead needed silver.
Right. Or, yeah, there's echoes of this in like Oblivion, where silver weapons and magic are useful against ghosts.
It went all the way up to Oblivion. It's really Skyrim was the first one that really didn't do too much with that, but like, and if you didn't have an appropriate thing, you could maybe magically enchanted so that it's like, okay, well now at least it's magically enchanted so you can use it again. But like, you know, the material the weapon was made out of mattered back then much more than just I get more protection or damage out of this. There was elements to what the stuff it was made out of really mattered.
I think this was one of the things that really drew me into playing Oblivion as my first real I mean, I dabbled in Morrowind a little bit, but we've talked about that. I bounced off it pretty easily. But when Oblivion came out, it grabbed me. And one of the things that grabbed me about it was that I did a quest where I had to fight a ghost and I couldn't hit the ghost. I was like,
yes,
why can I not damage the ghost? And I had to figure it out. And I was like, oh, I need to find a silver sword. And even though I was leveled above the point where silver was one of the better weapon options, I still had to plan around going and finding a silver sword. I think I found a merchant who was selling one.
Right.
And I went and bought it. And then I went back and I was able to fight the ghost. And there's something that felt way more intentional about that kind of thing, rather than I'm just a steamroller and everything I come across, I can just kind of bowl through.
That's one of the things I do wish they would bring back to the series, actually. That was one of the few things that I really was like, I don't really like that Skyrim did away with that. And they didn't bring it back for Elder Scrolls Online either. It's kind of not a thing at the moment.
Right. Which is
one of the features I thought was pretty neat.
Yeah, I don't think it needs to be an ESO. I think ESO has a different focus. It's less about the world feeling like a real place and more about it feeling like a theme park where you can run around with your friends or by yourself and just kind of do all the things that you want to do and collect stuff. It's a little bit more, it's a little less intense, I guess you could say.
Yeah, a little bit.
So anyway, so let's get into some of the creature types. There are a lot of standard creature types. We've got animals and monsters and humanoids. And let's just dig into the animals here. This section is kind of interesting. It says animals are mundane creatures or oversized versions of them. They never carry any treasure, though you may still retrieve arrows from their corpses, which was a thing in Daggerfall.
Sure was.
That was a part of the series really
when
early
you loot
on.
The body, sometimes you will see the arrow in the inventory that you're looting through, which is really, I was kind of blown away that that was a thing.
Yeah, that's great. Certain animals are carriers of disease. No special materials are required to harm animals. So you don't need like silver weapons or whatever.
Yeah. Bludgeon the cat and the cat's not going to do so well until the cat fights back. Right. It's sick of you.
Right. So the animals that are included, and these are animals that you come across as enemies. These are not passive animals. These are not like, you know, house cats or the birds that are chirping in the trees.
No.
Things like that, right?
They're rats, not skeevers yet.
Oh, yeah. So we've got...
Yeah, you'll see at least more rats than skeevers and stuff like that.
Yeah, so let's go through the list. We've got giant bats, giant scorpions, grizzly bears, rats, not skeevers... saber-toothed tigers, slaughterfish are there.
They're much more horrific.
They're even worse.
They're enormous in this game. They're like giant eels just covered in teeth.
Yeah. By Skyrim, they're not so bad.
Fuel.
Morrowind, they're still pretty terrible.
So, yeah, Morrowind, they're pretty awful. I mean, they're never pleasant. They look kind of derpy in Elder Scrolls Online. They're just like that little yellow fat thing with, they kind of look like a chubby piranha.
Chubby piranha.
It's just like a circle with like a displeased face.
With a grumpy face, grumpy circle face.
Yeah, a little grumpy face.
So slaughterfish and then spiders. And you would think maybe there would be more animals than that, but there's not. This is the list.
That was the list.
And then
always
there's
loving those spiders. It's just such a common thing in fantasy games.
Yeah, that's true. Because I think part of a fantasy world is throwing people into situations that get reactions.
Right. And a lot of people don't like spiders.
Yeah.
So like, that's why they, so I get it. It's like, here's a thing that universally people are not a fan of.
Right. So you got creatures like that, and some of them are carriers of disease. So you got to be careful about that. Like they bite you, you get the disease, that kind of thing. But otherwise, they don't give you a whole lot in this case of treasure. You don't really get much off of them, and they're just kind of creatures in the world, so you got to deal with them. But then there are monsters. Monsters are fantastical creatures, often possessing various magical abilities. These can range from magical attacks to various magical resistances, and many monsters can only be harmed by weapons made of special materials. All monsters have an associated language skill.
Which is wild.
What? All monsters can talk in some language.
Sure can.
Also, unlike animals, you can find some treasure on the corpses of most monsters. Okay, so they're like a step up from animals in a few different ways. You get treasure from them, but they also have language skills, which means that if you can learn their languages, you can talk to them and understand them.
It seems that way. You get like, from what I understand, you get some communication with them. It was a thing you could do in Battlespire as well. Like you could kind of communicate, but there's like different language skills you can get. I didn't go into any of them because I'm very unlikable on my character. I have like a personality of 12, so nobody likes me, even if they can't speak my language. So I figured it was kind of a waste of skill to go into something like that.
Why speak their language if it's just going to piss them off more?
Right. All I'm going to do is learn that somebody doesn't like me in a different language.
That's a pretty good point. Yeah, I think you can kind of just tell by the tone. Yeah, at some point.
I was going to say, simply asking for directions and people just like spit at my character. I'm like, very good then.
Cool. I don't need to understand your words to get the message.
Great, I get it. You're not a fan.
Got it. So the different monsters include centaur. They're in this. I mean, you...
Something that has been off and on throughout the series, but something they really haven't done much with in quite a while.
Mm-hmm.
This is the centaur thing.
Certain kinds of... Okay, so aside, before we get to the rest of the monsters, one of the things that you see in a lot of fantasy are monsters that are pulled from mythology and different types of mythology, right? Centaur, harpies, things like that are pulled from Greek mythology. Then you have dragons, which are across multiple mythologies. But then you also have gargoyles or... I don't know, imps or spriggans that come from different mythologies, depending on where you get them, or nymphs, which I think is another Greek one. As series seem to go on, and this seems to happen with Elder Scrolls as well, oftentimes they'll take some of those that seem to be pulled from something else and they'll rename them or they'll redesign them in later games.
Yeah, they'll kind of make them their own.
Right. So like, it's weird to me that you can jump into Diablo 4 and you can still fight Balrogs, because a Balrog is very much a J.R.R. Tolkien
monster. That's just straight
monster.
Up a Lord of the Rings thing, yeah.
Right, it is directly out of the Lord of the Rings. It is not a creature that existed in mythology before that. There may have been demonic creatures that are similar to it, but but a specifically named Balrog is a Lord of the Rings monster, right? So I get pulling that stuff out over time, even though Diablo didn't do it, but what about like centaur? I mean, I guess you could see it's like World
General
of Warcraft
mythology
has
or something?
Centaurs still, and they're you know, like, yeah, the stuff that's very general. It's I don't know. It seems like sometimes they
the last
shy
time
away from it.
An Elder Scrolls game had a centaur was actual Elder Scrolls Legends, the card game, because it's been under like it hasn't really been used for quite a while, unless I'm just forgetting an instance of it, but it's not one of the more common things. Whereas like just on the note of it, we'll get into it in a second, but like the idea of having something be, you know, based on something, but it's your own, like Atronachs, they don't have like elementals in the Elder Scrolls series.
Right. Yeah.
They have Atronachs, which I personally think is a way cooler name, but.
It makes them a little bit different because we can talk about Atronachs in a little bit. Because
we'll get to Atronachs, but it's just on the note of like a twist on something that does sort of exist in other mythologies, but they made it theirs.
Right. Right. So in Daggerfall, we have centaur, dragonlings, not dragons, dragonlings. Dreg. I don't remember how to pronounce this one.
I think it's supposed to be Dreg.
Dreg. So those show up,
so.
Even though they're hard to pronounce really early in the series. Sorry, my dog's barking in the background.
I can't even hear.
Gargoyles, giants, harpy, imps, lamia, nymphs, and spriggan. So a lot of these you see later in the series. I mean, especially like dragons or like dragonlings, but also giants, like the idea that like giants were in it from a very early point. And What's also interesting about this is these are monsters, not humanoids. A giant is not designated as a humanoid. It is a humanoid.
It's designated a monster. Right. Yeah.
A centaur is not a human. A lamia is not a humanoid, even though they have human-ish traits.
It's a game back, they're not a playable race yet. But originally, you had in Arena, you had lizard mans instead of right. like, and you had
instead of Argonian,
yeah. orcs. Orcs right. were not like a playable, fleshed out race. It was just like, here's an orc. Orc are bad. It's like, oh, right. all right, right. sure.
You've read and The Lord of the Rings, how, right? Orcs are bad things.
Right. And now look how elaborate they are in the series. So it's like, yeah. sometimes they just kind of, they haven't gotten to it yet to really explore what it should be.
Yeah. So it does feel early with some of these. But the monsters, you kill them, you get treasure some of the time, and that's cool, right? But it seems like they really kept most of the monster development for humanoid kinds of creatures. And humanoids include regular people that are just happen to be working for factions that you are against or whatever, but also lots of other kinds of creatures as well. Here's what it says about humanoids on the UESP. It says, in addition to fierce beasts and deadly monstrosities, humanoid foes are often encountered throughout the Iliac Bay. Humanoids always have the same level as your character, and they can be fairly dangerous at higher levels. If your character level rises during a quest or while in a dungeon, humanoid foes that are already generated, be it as quest adversaries or random dungeon inhabitants, will not rise in level. So you definitely want to make sure you level up early in the dungeon.
Yeah,
so you get an advantage.
You know, nice and easy. Just plan out with such meticulous detail that right. you know when you're going to level up, but make sure that they've already generated all these humans in the zone you're in.
That's right.
Piece yes. of cake.
Mm-hmm. You got this. They will remain at the same level as your character when you accept the quest or enter the dungeon. Humanoids carry equipment like orcs and fall into three categories. Warriors, which are heavily armored and use ranged attacks at a distance. This includes, and this like these little subcategories for all these different classes, right? Archer, barbarian, guard, knight, monk, ranger, and warrior. Then there are mages. They have the ability to cast spells. Battle mage, healer, mage, nightblade, sorcerer. Why does this feel like I'm in the character creator for Oblivion?
Weird.
Then there's thieves, lightly armored and often attack rapidly, also use ranged attacks at a distance. Acrobat, assassin, bard, burglar, rogue, and thief. This feels like the Oblivion character creation list, which is crazy to think about because this game came out 10 years, 12 years before Oblivion.
Yep.
So
I always love that they've kind of had these, well, I guess except for Skyrim, because they didn't really have classes in Skyrim. It was just kind of here you are. But like the class system that used to be in the game, it's amazing how many of the classes had kind of been around for a long time.
Yeah.
And even in Elder Scrolls Online, a couple of them still exist. Sorcerer is a pretty generic thing or whatever, but they even like Nightblades are in the Elder Scrolls Online as a class choice.
Right. Yeah. They've always had certain classes that either seem to be like hybrid classes or just kind of were unique to the series, like Nightblade, Battle Mage, Acrobat. These have always, to me, felt more like Elder Scrolls designed classes than things that they were pulling from, say, Dungeons and Dragons. And
sure.
I could be wrong about that. Who knows? Maybe Nightblade shows up in early D&D
builds.
Right.
I always just assumed that there's going to be some weird esoteric version of something. It's like, oh, well, this game actually did it first. It's like, I had no idea that was a thing, but all right. This is my first example of it then.
Right. So like burglar, that's clearly a Hobbit reference because they refer to him as the burglar of the party.
Sure.
You know, that kind of thing. Bard, that's D&D thing. You know, like barbarian, that's a D&D thing. But there are some where they've
slightly misspelled place called Mirkwood in the Elder Scrolls Arena that for some reason they don't talk about anymore, really.
Right. So if you are a humanoid and you are the type of humanoid that can cast spells, then there's a spell table and there are spells that you can, that, not you, that the NPCs or enemies that you're fighting
loyal you.
Anybody who's of these levels and a spellcaster can have access to, specifically the enemies you're fighting. So at level 1 and 2, enemy spellcasters can cast Ice Bolt and Ice Storm. Early spellcasters are clearly just winter mages.
Yeah. They're just refrigerator mechanics.
That's their job. Their job is to keep the drinks cold at the bar.
Exactly.
That's it. A little ice storm inside the cooler, keep everything nice and cold. Mm-hmm.
And then swirl it around and pretend it's a vortex.
Yeah, and then hand out the beers. Yep. Right, right. So when you hit level three, or when they hit level three, 3 to 5, you get lightning, silence, and spell shield. This is where things start to get a little bit more interesting, because now, and remember, this isn't just a specific type of magic user who now at level 3 to 5 can cast silence. This is anybody. This is anybody who's
right
in this range may have access to these spells.
Yeah, there's a chance that they could have one of these.
Right.
Or all of these.
Or all of them, right? So, like, it's not like, oh, I know I'm going up against a lich, and a lich has the ability to raise undead things around it, so I need to be aware of that. It's more of, oh, crap, I came across another wizard-type character. I hope he doesn't silence me, because my character only casts spells, and I need to not be silenced. So you end up in that kind of situation.
Right. You downplay what something might be, and it turns out it's like something totally different that's beating the crap out of you.
Yeah, yeah. So at level 6 through 8, you get Firestorm. Invisibility becomes a thing you have to worry about. Lightning, Spell Shield, and Wizard's Fire. 9 to 11, you get Paralysis and Shock. These all sound like terrible things that you never want to have to deal with.
Paralysis in these games is... I'm not sure that I've died to that in this one. I died to it a lot in Arena, because if you get paralyzed in water, you just drown.
Yeah, you're just stuck.
You just drown. That's just the end of the story, because you're paralyzed and you're underwater, so you're drowned. I think it's the same in Daggerfall, but off the top of my head, I can't remember if I've met that unfortunate demise in game yet or not.
Yeah, that's
horrible. That
sounds terrible. So at level 12 through 14, you get they may get access to Balina's Antidote, which is like a cure poison spell. So if you go around poisoning things, they can cure themselves. Energy Leech, Fireball, Free Action.
That's always good if you're paralyzed underwater.
You can't get more D&D than Free Action.
Yeah, for real.
And then Shock. At level 15 through 17... Balina's Antidote also still have access to Fireball, also Free Action, Shock, and Wizard Rend. I don't know why these are duplicated on this list.
Yeah, that's kind of weird.
Other than the fact that you get access to just this selection of things, and you no longer have access to the previous ones.
Well, maybe.
I think that might be what's happening here. And then level 18 and higher, Balina's Antidote, Fireball, Free Action, Lightning, Shock, Toxic Cloud, and Wizard Rend. Want to know what Wizard Rend does?
Okay, good, because I was about to just start blindly guessing.
Do you want to guess? You want to just guess what Wizard Rend does?
It takes their hat, that little well-known wizard hat.
It steals your wizard hat.
Yoinks it.
No, it is an untouch spell. They have to physically touch you, and it will damage your spell points and paralyze you. So it sucks. It basically sucks out your magicka.
It sucks your wizardness out.
It sucks your wizardness out, and then you get paralyzed.
That's miserable.
Yeah, it's pretty, especially if you're a magic user, right? Because now you're stuck, and you also don't have any more magic.
And it's an awkward violation of my personal space if you have to actually, like, put your hand on my shoulder or something to do it. I don't care for that either, actually.
Yeah, you get groped.
Yeah, you're uncomfortably close to me. It's like, no.
You get groped. And that makes you feel so uncomfortable.
Trying to bite you. Like, please don't put your hand on my shoulder. I don't like any of this.
Or anywhere else on me. And so after you're groped, you feel so violated that you both can't move and you can no longer cast spells.
I don't like it.
Yep.
I don't care for that.
Yeah.
So, Wizard Rend. Yeah.
So Wizard Rend. So those are the spells
that
magic using creatures. We still have to get into the details about orcs and lycanthropes. That's how you say that.
Lycanthropes.
Words just are difficult.
Lycanthropy.
We got more stuff to get to, but we have to go thank our patrons. So let's go do that. And then we're going to talk more about these other humanoid characters. So don't go anywhere.
It's that time. Holiday shopping is here, and I've got something to help you out. Uncommon Goods takes the stress out of gifting with thousands of unique, high-quality finds you won't see anywhere else. And that's legit. How many different stores can you find exactly the same products and you just are shopping for whoever has the best deal? No, this is a place that has high-quality, unique, often handmade or made in the US products by independent artists and small businesses that truly create one-of-a-kind gifts for all sorts of different seasons, and it's the holiday season. Well, get this. I found one that I thought was super cool. Now, my wife loves puzzles. She loves mysteries. She loves escape rooms. They have murder mystery jigsaw puzzles where you use the puzzle to solve the mystery. There's a few of these, and I think I might pick up the clairvoyant convention one. I think she'll love it. And that's just one example. They've got gifts for moms and teens, book lovers, history buffs, diehard football fans, foodies, mixologists, gardeners. There's something here for everybody on your gift list. And they give back $1 to a nonprofit partner of your choice with every purchase. They've donated more than $3.1 million to date. So don't wait. Cross those names off your list before the rush. To get 15% off your next gift, go to uncommongoods.com/scrollslore. That's uncommongoods.com/scrollslore for 15% off. Uncommon Goods, we're all out of the ordinary.
This is Hamish Morak, Dragonborn, and you are educating yourself to the Elder Scrolls Lorecast.
All right, here we are in the middle of the show. This is where we get to thank our patrons for being so awesome. Also, Lotus and I are cooking up some more things, maybe, to start adding to the Patreon for people who are subscribers.
Yeah, make it a little better for people.
We got some ideas, and I think some of them are pretty cool. So we'll have
a... need to manage to iron them all out.
Yeah, we'll iron them out. Yes, Dookie Man, this is live. Also, welcome to the stream.
Also,
that's such a
fantastic.
Good name.
Five stars.
Dookie
five
Man. Stars. Does the 521 mean anything? I don't know. Let us know. But we'll let you know what's coming. We'll make an official announcement soon. But in the meantime, we have to thank our newest patrons. Let's see. We've got X Lucem, I think it's Lucem, maybe Lucem, Rudis M, and Jared H. Welcome to the Patreon. So glad that you are all here and joining us. Also, we have to shout out our Daedric Princes, and our Daedric Prince list is growing, Lotus. It may actually hit the number of actual Daedric Princes if it continues growing at this rate.
I was going to say, we're maxing out the spokes on the wheel here.
Yeah, so we've got Blinding Vision, Fall, Hircine, who's in chat. Hircine, welcome. How's it going? Just a Little Bit of Chaos, Kiracy, and I was corrected. It's Peter R. Thank you so much for helping to support the show. Yeah, Peter joined our Discord and jumped in and let me know. Yeah, it's pronounced like Peter. So now I know. Now I don't have to mess up your name. Thank you. Welcome to the new patrons. Thank you for being here and supporting the show. If you are interested, if we've been helping you get through your workday or your commute or your workout or whatever, and you'd like to get some of the early episodes that are only up on the Patreon, some of the stuff we're cooking up, t-shirts, stickers, join us on Patreon chats, lots of fun stuff. Head over to patreon.com/ElderScrollsLorecast. Check everything out. We would love the support, and we'd love to give you some cool stuff too. So go check that out. Also, Lotus, we got a new review that came in. This is from Suspicious Reviewer, which makes me wonder if this is somebody that we're supposed to recognize based on the review. I'm not sure. But if you leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, we'll read it on a future episode of the show. This one says, Suspicious Reviewer, dynamic. I recently started listening to you guys during my 12-hour shifts and also during my gym sessions. The lore and history of the Elder Scrolls series has always been intriguing to myself. You two do a tremendous job at going into detail about these things that we all love and putting them into perspective many can understand. Keep up the good work. I would definitely love to see a segment done by Robots and Lotus relating the cultures of the races of Tamriel with real-life counterparts. A cultural deep dive, if you will. You know, we've referenced some of those things when we've
referenced
over
some of those. That'd be kind of neat to just go through, like, just a full deep dive on, like,
yeah,
how each race, because some of them are really strong pulls and some of them are really, really unique.
That's true.
Mixes.
That's true. Yeah, I know that we've talked about it a little bit as we went through each of them, but to even just do one whole episode that's just like, here's all the different cultures and here are the similarities or differences.
Right.
Other stuff, kind of put all in one place, could be cool. So thanks for the idea. I love the idea for new episode ideas and things like that, because it helps us give you guys more of the things that you're interested in. And also, thanks for the 5-star review. Also, if you'd appreciate like to help it. Us out in other ways, you can leave a 5-star rating on Spotify or whatever other platform you listen to this on. And you can also share the show with your friends and stuff like that. All of that stuff helps. And thank you so much for being here. All right, Lotus, we got to get back to orcs and lycra, whatever I call them. Here we go.
You're listening to the Elder Scrolls Lorecast, dear child of Sithis. That is why the Night Mother loves you.
So, Lotus, do you have the Daggerfall user's guide?
Yes.
I thought maybe.
I do.
Was this the thing? Was this one of those things that came in the big box because this was like a 90s PC?
You know what? We'll just grab it right now. Hold on. It's right on the shelf behind me.
Here, I'm going to read this while you go get it. So in the Daggerfall user's guide, because these are the kinds of things that you would get with video games or PC games in the 90s, you would get descriptions and all sorts of other stuff that you could read when not playing the game. So in that guide, we get descriptions of things like orcs and lycanthropes and whatever. So go ahead.
What they have is, I didn't grab the full, because there's the big box version, because everything back in the day used to come in these giant big computer boxes. And there was kind of like your instruction manual, which is one of the user's guides. Yeah. And then for all the information, there was also Prima's version, which is
the
walkthrough, as well as just lore galore and apparently a Home Depot receipt from
what?
Wow. What remember, I got the second hand.
Remember when you would go to like Best Buy and there would be just shelves of like these game guides, and then the internet happened and then they all slowly disappeared.
I'm pretty sure Prima's out of business now, but I'm still very, very big fan of this thing. This is actually one of the less expensive, like weird guide things, mm-hmm. but same thing. It's got like all the weird stuff in it, along with walkthroughs, as well as some critical glitches that were based out of the game.
Yeah. And a lot of these were designed or written by or investigated by people who weren't developers in the actual studio themselves.
Yes.
Were these like
it's
external
like usually
people.
Their third party
right.
that was kind
right.
of doing it.
So they're always a little bit off in either describing things in different ways that aren't the same way that the game would actually describe them or the developers would describe them. Or sometimes they even give you information that's not actually true because they were just in a rush to get something published and then they didn't realize they made a mistake or whatever. So here's what the Daggerfall user's guide says about orcs. Get ready for this. From a distance, an orc may resemble a large, squat, muscular man. Before the tusks become evident and the green skin and the piggish eyes are seen, usually when a viewer is that close to an orc, he or she is not taking notes about the details. This is so not written by the developers. Orcs are among the most common encounters around the Iliac Bay, particularly around the southern half of the Hrothgarian Mountains. They are a constantly savage group, ready for a fight no matter the odds. Some rather eccentric researchers have suggested that the orcs have a culture as ancient and sophisticated as ours, and that their seeming mindless barbarity is somehow related to rites of passage or tests of courage. It is highly likely that these researchers have never felt the sting of an orc captain's barbed axe. Now, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe this is actually quoted from the book guide. I'm not 100% sure.
This one might be.
It might be. Because at the end, it feels very foreshadowy of the way orcs develop in the future.
Yes, it's what they form into, and it's very flowery text, which is a thing that I've kind of joked about that the series so far has had to do a couple times because they can't really, with sprite work and pixelated graphics, kind of show you some of the stuff that's happening. So they give you a very vivid description in like a little pop-up box in a lot of these games. So that definitely... That tracks a decent amount.
That feels like it. Yeah, I'm curious now because it doesn't tell me specifically if this is quoted from the guide that's in the book or the user's guide as in the Prima guide. I think this is going to be the
Prima
book
guide also has a bunch of chunks of it. That one sounds like, because I haven't got these things memorized exactly, but I I think that one actually might be officially written.
Yeah, okay. Then as we get further into this, I think I'm a little bit more convinced about that too. So different types of orcs. You have orc sergeant, orc shaman, and orc warlord. There's a variety that you can come across. All right, lycanthropes. I'm going to pronounce it correctly now. The user's guide has a quote about that as well. These cursed creatures are men by day, completely indistinguishable from, quote, normal men. Are you a normal man? Do you feel like a normal man?
I feel like... You know what? By day, I am.
Oh, okay.
We'll go with that.
All right. Well, now I'm really curious. It goes on and says, and savage half-beast predators when the moon is full. The moon. Not moons.
Yep.
The moon.
Look, you just have Secunda at the moment.
There's only one, I guess. At least two lycanthropes are common to the Iliac Bay environs, the werewolf and the werebore. We've talked about this on other episodes, how there's a variety of different were creatures in Elder Scrolls.
Yeah, many were creatures. This game, you can be a were boar or a werewolf.
Yeah, werewolf is so much cooler than were boar. I mean, if you had to pick.
Yeah, so I am a werewolf unintentionally in game because
not you weren't hinting at this being really who you are, being a normal man during the day.
Both.
Okay.
I was just referring to it in Daggerfall for the sake of it.
You only play characters in games that actually reflect you in reality.
Exactly.
Both of those are werewolves.
I'm always a dark elf because I'm actually a dark elf. No, they have like different ways they look as well. And I think the stats are slightly different, but it can kind of sneak up on you in this game. I mean, I know it can in any of the games. A lot of people are surprised when you first become a lycanthrope or a vampire type of deal. The first time oftentimes catches you off guard, but they kind of give you a little bit of warning. Yeah, in this one, I kind of got a little bit of warning, and then I had like they give you a very ridiculous fever dream of you just being naked, and then all of a sudden you're all werewolfy, and I'm like, what just happened to me? And boom, werewolf.
Thanks, Hercene. Hercene in chat says, I got excited.
Thanks,
making
Hercene.
Them. Why'd you have to make were-boars? I mean, wolves were cool enough. Did you have to have like slightly less cool were-monsters also? So this quote goes on and says, the werewolf is only found in the woodlands of Hyrok and rarely in the jungles of Hammerfell, but the were-boar is found everywhere, and it is the most fearsome opponent. Neither seems to be capable of a thought beyond bloodlust, and both are impervious to common weaponry. Their claws are keen as razors and are somehow capable of transmitting the dreaded lycanthropy to those it strikes. While lycanthropy is a relatively simple disease for most temples to treat, few who survive a were-boar attack are likely to do more than be thankful and rest for several days. Tis ironic. It's funny that he uses tis here.
Tis ironic.
Tis ironic. The count of blessings when you have just been cursed. So there's were-boars and werewolves, and were-boars are more common, and you have to use like silver in order to fight them, and that's part of the series from this point on. So
totally unrelated to lore, but just gonna say that like as everybody knows, when you play these games in first person, which wasn't really an option back then, you were just in first person, but you're holding your sword, you're holding your, you can see your hand when you can. The werewolf hand, it's just this pair of little claws at the bottom of the screen, and it's the most casual thing because you have to feed this game. It's not like a casual thing.
Yeah, we can see him on the screen right now. Like right now, you got your little werewolf hands out.
And that's actually really funny timing. It's like we planned this way better than we did. Yeah. So, okay. So those little werewolf claws amazingly on screen right now. That's amazing that that synced up like that.
Yeah.
But the reason I bring it up, other than they look kind of ridiculous, but when you feed in this game, because it's required, otherwise, unlike the other games where you get somewhat negative status effects from being a werewolf or a vampire, they're really extreme in this game. Like, it brings you down so that you have one hit point if you don't feed. So basically, a strong breeze will kill you. So it forces you basically to feed. And in this game, to feed, all you do is just attack a civilian.
That's it.
And you just do this casual little rare. And it hits them, and they just explode into blood, and that's just so it.
Rawr.
Yeah, and it's just gore, and then it's just like, all right, cool, you're all better now for a month.
You just bathed in their explodey blood because you popped them like a balloon.
I think it's just to prove you can rather than that you actually need to feed.
Yeah, okay, so those are the were creatures. Let's move on to Atronachs, because that's a thing as well. You got Fire Atronachs, Flesh Atronachs, Ice Atronachs, and Iron Atronachs. And what's interesting is, whereas in most of the other games, Atronachs are almost always Daedric in origin, in this one, there are Atronachs that are just basically like constructs from mages.
Yeah, so it you deal a lot with them in the Mages Guild, actually.
Yeah.
Where it's like, oops, my Atronach creation's running amok. For this quest, go kill it, please. Like,
yeah,
okay, you just made one. Like, oh, sure.
Yeah, they're somewhere between like an elemental and like a golem. It's kind of like fusing those two concepts.
Yeah, kind
together.
Of. They're a little more golem-esque at the time, or just like these what a lot of people like flesh abominations and stuff like that that you see in the later games.
Yeah. Yeah, then we have undead creatures, and as we've talked about with the main quest line, undead play a big role in Daggerfall. You've got the Underking, you've got liches and necromancers, This is a very, very common type of enemy. We have ancient liches, ghosts, regular liches, mummies, skeletal warriors, vampires, vampires ancient, vampire agent, not ancient vampire, vampire nope. agent, wraiths, and zombies. And some of these carry disease. Some of them you have to use special kinds of weapons to fight. There's kind of a variety, and they show up in all sorts of different places. They're pretty common. Anything else you want to say about undead creatures?
No, I mean, they're definitely very, very common in the series, especially whenever you deal with Manimarco in any way.
Yeah.
It's just, this cave is literally just like, what do you do in your free time here, man? Like, this is not great.
Monster parties. That's it.
Just monster parties.
Parties. Just playing the jams and everybody's dancing. Everyone getting down. Everybody wants to dance with a skeletal warrior, right? and then the final group are Daedra. We get Daedra in Daggerfall.
We do get Daedra. They've kind of made their full entrance into the series at this point.
Yeah.
Certainly not what they become, but they're there.
They're there. We get these like demonic-ish creatures. And there's a description from the Daggerfall User's Guide for Daedra as well. Get this. The peasants have colorful terms for Daedra. Fiends, unclean spirits, the evil ones, the dark princes. The gods of torment, the infernal ones, and most commonly, demons. Those who wish to understand or battle these nightmarish beings, rather than live in fear, prefer the more circumspect term, Daedra. It is nearly impossible to say anything definitive about Daedra, despite thousands of years of scholarship devoted to their nature. Their reputation as cruel, amoral geniuses of destruction was somebody's 90s like garage band.
100%.
Right? Like I probably went to high school with those kids. Seems to be most deserved. If they are true evil, our definition of evil may need revision to include the complexity of their natures. So even in this early incarnation of
the word
Daedra, that's the right word. Speaking a lot has its drawbacks. But even in this early incarnation of Daedra, they were seen as more than just simply evil demons that do bad things. They were more complex than that.
They're weird. Like, they're weird, and it's even acknowledged that it's like, yeah, there's more to this. Something's just off.
Yeah, yeah. So they're complex. Daedra appear to have a well-organized hierarchy, and the ones found in our world are doubtless the weakest of the lot. This tracks. I mean, this still feels pretty common in the later games.
Yeah, you're not necessarily interacting with princes until you get them on their summoning days. And then it's like, okay, well, that takes a lot more effort than just like the Daedra bumbling around in the world of Tamriel.
Yeah, like it's way more common in even Oblivion or Skyrim to come across some mage's imp he summoned than a Daedroth coming out of a portal or something
right.
like that. Right,
or a Dromora Lord or something right. like that. It's like, okay,
yeah,
a little
yeah.
more intense.
Yeah, then it goes on. It says, of course, the Fire Daedra, the Frost Daedra, the Seducer, and the Daedra Lord are among the most dangerous creatures in Tamriel. But there is certainly something greater out there in the world they call Oblivion. The world they call Oblivion. Still haven't really formalized exactly what this Oblivion thing is, but it's some other world, I guess.
Sure, we'll go with that. Sure. It's fine.
Yeah. And then it ends with, perhaps we are already doomed to fall beneath their fire. And it basically listed out the different types of Daedra that show up in Daggerfall already in this. Daedra Lord, Daedra Seducer, Daedroth, which wasn't mentioned, Fire Daedra, and Frost Daedra. So they're kind of like fancy demons with a little bit more going on.
They really are. Back at this point in the series, they're still kind of essentially fancy demons. Then they haven't really fully come into their own, but you do get to interact with some of the Daedric princes, which is, you know, you can tell that there was a little more going on and they had started to flesh out the idea of these greater beings were controlling the lesser versions of them. And there was kind of like this hierarchy to them, which is pretty neat that it started quite so early in the series. And it's really been a staple to a lot of what the series becomes.
Yeah. I mean, the Daedra are a huge part of Elder. I mean, we've devoted so many episodes talking about Daedra and Daedric princes, those kinds of things. They are a huge piece of the lore and the mythology of Elder Scrolls at this point. And it's neat to see that this is kind of the origins of it, right? Like, this is the beginning.
Yeah.
So the last thing we're going to cover to wrap up this episode are the different diseases that you can get from animals and undead, because it mentions that in some of the articles that we've already talked about, right?
Yeah, because this stuff was actually pretty impactful back in these things, where it would literally inhibit ability to fast travel properly.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, well, you would die if you didn't treat it, and then you're just like, I'm going to travel across the seas. And it's like, well, dude, now you have hyper scurvy. Like, what are you doing?
Right, it just gets worse because as you travel, you're not treating it.
So it's right. Just like,
yeah. Okay. So if you come across an animal, then there's the potential that you could get brain fever. I've got that brain fever. Need some more cowbell. plague and stomach rot. I feel like I've, in the real world, have had brain fever and stomach rot before, but not plague. None of those sound great. The undead can give you way more. The list is much longer here. Brain fever. Consumption. I've got the consumption.
I died so much to consumption in the Elder Scrolls 1 arena.
Yeah.
I kept trying to make it back to town and I had consumption and I just kept passing away. And I'm like,
I feel like that's a true story from a lot of people in history, in our own history.
Yeah, I feel like that's just the Middle Ages.
Right. It's the Middle Ages. Oh, no, I died of consumption at the age of 22.
Yeah, like, exactly.
Okay. Yeah, that's you and like 15% of the population.
Yeah, the population of the planet.
Right. So brain fever, consumption, dementia, which is a much more modern seeming problem.
Yeah, that's a problem that's still with us.
Yes, very much so.
I don't care for it.
And as people get older, they're more likely to get it because they're living long enough to actually have that as a problem.
Yeah.
My wife does research on things like dementia and Alzheimer's.
Oh, that's fascinating.
Like that. That's what she
actually feel like I knew
she's,
that.
Yeah, she runs a research lab. That's one of the things she does. Leprosy, plague, red death. Not exactly sure what red death is, but we're going to dig into that. Stomach rot, swamp rot. That's what happens when you don't change your underpants enough. typhoid fever.
Oh, no, I don't like that.
And yellow fever.
Okay, typhoid is literally just a thing. It's just a thing.
Yeah, yeah, it's just a thing. Red death.
Just don't drink hissed juice.
Red death drains endurance and personality. It says here, you have contracted red death, a very serious disease which can quickly decimate a victim's endurance and even destroy personality until a cure is given or the victim dies. Decimate means divide by a tenth or reduce by a tenth. Did you know that? Like when a military, if you're in a military engagement and you're on the losing side and you were decimated by the other side,
yeah,
that means a tenth of your soldiers were killed or injured in the conflict.
It's actually funny.
But we use it wrong all the time, just like this.
I've heard that. And until you just said that, I totally forgot about that. And then as soon as you said that, I'm like, oh, yeah, no, that's totally. I know I've heard that before. Right. So, yes.
So if you actually take the real definition of decimate here, it means it reduces your endurance by a tenth, which isn't so super bad. I mean, it's not great, but it's not. Decimate, the way we use it in society now, means like to completely destroy. But that's not really what that means. And then there's a list of other diseases you can get seemingly in other ways. So this is fun as well. Not all diseases come from animals or undead. So we've got blood rot, brain fever, Caloron's curse, which drains strength, speed, and agility, cholera, crundiasis, which drains intelligence. Cholera drains all attributes rapidly. Consumption, which drains your willpower, agility, and strength. I need to slow down so I can talk correctly. Dementia, which drains your intelligence, willpower, and personality. Each of these is just like variations on just draining different things, right?
Yeah, it's varying versions of why you're getting messed up.
Right. We mentioned leprosy, plague, red death, stomach rot, swamp rot, typhoid fever, witch's pox, which drains strength and endurance. Wizard fever. I've got the wizard fever. That's another name of a band that I wish I was in. Wizard fever. Can we form a band called Wizard Fever? What kind of music does Wizard Fever
play? As long as we
play?
Don't have any songs called Wizard Rent.
Okay. Yeah. Agreed.
Okay. All right. That's my stipulation.
Wizard Fever plays a combination of heavy metal and new wave merged together.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right. I could be on board with that. Also, Wizard is a term that's not as commonly used, I don't feel, in the series so much as mages now.
Right.
There's a lot of wizardry stuff back in this earlier renditions of the series.
Yeah, yeah. And Hersine says they definitely had an airbrushed van. We need an airbrushed van
100%.
With a wizard on the side with a fever. Okay. Like he's burning up. Like he's like, oh, my head. And
all right.
Yeah. And there's a dragon, right. And then wound rot, which sounds like what happens if you don't clean your wounds, drains strength and endurance, and then yellow fever. So there's more than just the diseases you can get from the monsters and the creatures and things, because you can get them from other places as well. So there you go. That's the bestiary. It's kind of a quick overview. There's more details if you want to dig into this. You can always look up the article on UESP.
It's also interesting because you can get this or a version of this in the game. It is a literal book, which is actually really interesting. I had like 12 of them on stream at one point and realized it weighed like 50 pounds. And my character was just like, why are all these books so heavy?
Why are these books like bricks?
Yeah. Yeah. So it is something you can literally get in game, which is kind of fun.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. So thanks for joining us, everybody. This has been the bestiary of Daggerfall. And now you can see some of these things went on to create other stuff and to kind of grow and evolve in the series. And some of these things just aren't really around anymore.
Yeah, we haven't seen in a while.
Yeah. Yeah. Pretty cool stuff. Lotus, you have anything else going on you want to share before we head out?
No, we actually didn't get to record an episode of Tales last weekend, so we're hoping to do it this weekend. I kind of really want to talk about Gold Road and everything. I'm currently jonesing for Gold Road to actually drop on the 18th so that I can get my hands on what I haven't played. But yeah, other than that, I'm still working on trying to get my schedule enough so that I can stream some more Daggerfall, because I'm close to the end of the game, I believe. And I just simply haven't had the time to finish out the Let's Play with everybody, but I'm hoping to do it soon. So stay tuned. I'll try to let everybody know with as much notice as possible.
Yeah. Yeah. Stay tuned for that stuff. Also, thanks for Hirstine reminding me about the random page, which I forget there every time. All right. I hit the button
of the random UESP page.
I hit the random page button, and we got, this is a character. This is an NPC from Elder Scrolls Online. Her name is Mayla.
I love the phonetically feeling this whole thing out. Really adding to it.
Yeah, like a lich, I gotta touch it until all of a sudden I drain all of its magic spells and then it's stuck and can't move. Mayla Hinault is a Breton farmer who is taking refuge with her family in her farmhouse while the Stornhelm Guard do battle with the Blood Fiends on their farm. She's the daughter of Genove and Melita Hinault, and the sister of Joan, maybe Yawan, I don't know, and Merrick Hinault. There you go. That's it. There's a bunch of dialogue.
Everybody's enriched from that.
She's one of those characters you run into in the midst of a quest, and you can talk to her and ask her some questions and things. That's pretty much it. I'm not going to read the whole article because it's mostly just like the conversational
the family tree stuff. And then all of the things they can say.
Right. So there you go. She shows up during some quests in Stornhelm Guard, while Stornhelm Guard fights the Blood Fiends, which we talked about Undead Monsters. That's kind of similar.
Yeah. It's, you know what? That was very on brand. I take it all back.
Yeah. There you go. So thanks, Mayla. There you go. Thanks for reminding me to hit the random page. Also, if you want to check out any of the other stuff I'm doing, like the Fallout Lorecast or the Lord of the Rings Lorecast. Oh, by the way, if you're into Lord of the Rings and you want a deep dive, like a real deep dive on The Hobbit, we just started that. So those are going to be the new episodes. We're doing a very close reading of The Hobbit, and I'm so excited about it. So these books are so wonderful. So if you want to see what influenced games like The Elder Scrolls through one of the most printed book ever, over 100 million copies by like the 1960s or something like that. It's insane.
That's wild.
Yeah. Yeah. Crazy stuff. It's up there with like the Bible. So there you go. So go check out my other stuff, robotsradio.net for my stuff and a bunch of other people creating cool stuff on the network. Lots of fun content out there for you to dive into. Thanks for tuning in, everybody. Thank you for being here for the live stream. And I hope you enjoyed the fun little overlay behind us with all the action from the game. Let us know your thoughts on anything that we brought up today. Jump in the Discord and have a wonderful week. We'll see you next time. Bye, everyone.
See you later.
Thanks for tuning in to the Elder Scrolls Lorecast. Check out robotsradio.net for more podcasts just like this. And join us on the Robots Radio Discord. Be part of a community of over 5,000 people who are excited about video games and so much more. Robots Radio. Games. Lore. Stories. Community. Just press play.